This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kazilski and Faggy Stern.
Without further ado, welcome to the show, Nikki.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Nikki. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
I think it was like quite an amazing thing that you came in the other day because with school starting, it was quite exciting to have someone like you help us, the mothers, the teachers, the children on this journey. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I just have to tell you one thing, that first of all, I'm on that journey too. You know, I'm also, it's an area that needs a lot of work throughout your life, and I'm certainly not there. And I might have a few ideas, but it's a work in progress for all of us.
Absolutely. And I think that the place to start is in school.
Right.
Well, let's kick it off because I don't know anything about social emotional learning. What is that? What is the definition of social emotional learning?
Okay. So social emotional learning it's a methodology that you use in school to teach social emotional skills to children as they are growing up. But that is like the actual definition of it, like that it happens in schools. But the truth is it happens in many, many areas throughout life, whether it's at school, whether it's at home, whether it's at work. This kind of learning is something that needs to be integrated in all different areas. And this is the ability of people to learn the skills to get along with other people. What are the skills that I need to build healthy and satisfying relationships? And in a way, that's what you said in the beginning, that you're there for the emotional and physical and spiritual health of a human being. And research has shown very clearly that building healthy emotional and social skills really sets you up for a lot of success in many different areas. If you had to think of what would you prefer as a child, would you prefer your child to get 10 A's? Or would you like your child to be able to build a satisfying relationship in a marriage and with their children?
Right. Mm-hmm. So then how does your work differ from a psychologist? You actually started as a speech therapist. Explain to us your journey on how you came to this.
So first of all, it's a very, very small part of speech therapy. Not many people do this, except it's a growing area all over the world. This is a new area. It's exciting. There's a lot of programs and information out there, but not many speech therapists are doing this. So I am not the classical speech therapist. I'm more of a counselor type of person and creative. And this is the area that I absolutely love because it's taking the opportunity to take areas in our lives that are pretty obvious. You know, all the things that we talk about, you know about eye contact, you know about turn taking and understanding emotions. These are very important things, but they're very unconscious. So we're taking them from a very unconscious place and bringing them into conscious discussion. And it differs from a psychologist in that it's very skill based. Although we enter into the emotional world and the psyche, it's much more skill based, and that is the focus.
How do children naturally learn these skills?
So the truth is, we all learn skills naturally growing up in our homes. So we all learn the skills naturally from parents, from caregivers, from teachers. We teach them, right? We teach kids to say thank you. We tell them to wait your turn. These are the kind of things that we learn on a everyday basis. But there's another area that we learn, and that is on the playground. So the teaching and caregiving area is the place that we teach it. But the playground is where we actually put all this information into practice. And it can be a very, very messy place, a socially, emotionally messy and painful place. But that is the opportunity for children to apply the skills that we've been trying to teach them all the time.
You almost need the field to be giving them these skills as they're playing.
Exactly. And that's in a way the role of the teacher, and why the teacher's role is so important. I mean, teachers today are so stressed with the amount of academic information that they have to put through. But not only that, now there's this whole area of children who don't know how to deal with relationships. They don't know how to solve conflicts. They don't know how to communicate with each other. So what happens on the playground, all the messy and negative behavior comes out. And the teachers have a role that differs. It's almost like an in-between role. They need to facilitate the application of the knowledge.
Surely that's also something that has to happen in the home. I mean, I'm just thinking about it. Yes, absolutely. Like most times when you pick up your kid from school, they're distraught because this one was nasty to me, or they had a fight, or they didn't let me share, you know, our lunch on the plate, whatever it was. There's that whole element. But gee, I don't know. Well, maybe there's an exception to the rule, but most mothers are exasperated in the home with the social dynamic of fighting and not sharing and not listening and not. So surely it's something that comes across from parent to, and definitely. Then I guess you do get it into the workplace also.
Definitely. As I say, it integrates and goes through all different areas of social and practical interactive life that we see today. And I'm going to say something that's quite hard to hear, is that before we teach our children, we have to teach ourselves these skills. And that's the hard thing, because in order to deal with a relationship, there's a lot of information that comes before handling relationships. So say, for example, your kids are having a fight. So our natural role or our inclination is to go and fix it. Okay, now you go to this room and you go to that room, or I'm taking away this toy. So what are we doing? We are fixing the problem for the kid, but we are not teaching them any of the skills that they need to do it next time by themselves.
Yes.
And not only that, is that in order for us to do that, we have to know what's going on inside of ourselves. We have to have our own self-awareness. We have to have empathy for the children. We need to be able to change our mindset in a way that's not rock-brained or rigid. We can be flexible. So in order to help, we have to help ourselves first. So that's why I'm so much in the journey too.
Okay, so I mean, this is absolutely interesting, and I'd like to, after the break, go through and discuss, like, what are the actual skills, because I think that we all have organically just been brought up, just depending on, you know, our parents and our parents' persona, and everybody forgives their parents because most parents do the best that they can with, you know, the skills that they have. And now suddenly there's been a turnaround of looking and saying, well, maybe what I learned from my parents is not necessarily correct, or I could better upskill myself to understand, you know, what does conflict do to me? You know, maybe I was a child that just got bashed and smashed around, or maybe I was the bully in the home. And so when I just see it in my house, I just react as opposed to proactively, like, dealing with the situation. If you'd like to join the conversation, 34519 is our SMS line, 061-895-1019, our Telegram number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
We are speaking with Nikki Merkin, a speech therapist who has a special interest in social emotional learning. And we're talking about skills that we need to upskill ourselves, right? It says, my, how you have changed since I've changed, right? So how can we change ourselves? What skills do we need? What should we be aware of?
So the first thing is like, look at the word. It's social emotional, and the emotional component is huge. In order to have healthy interactions, we have to know what's going within us emotionally. And the emotional world is a very exciting place. If you think of an emotion, for example, it happens in the lower part of your brain, what they call the primitive part. And that is, I think this is Daniel Seligman. I can't remember who he wrote a book, The Whole Brain Child. It's a very, very good reading. But he speaks about how there's what we call the lower brain and then the higher brain. So the lower brain is that where you have an emotion. So you have like the sense that something's happening inside of you, but it's very unconscious. So you can't work with that feeling when it's in that state. So we need to, in a way, bring it up into the upper part of the brain, which is the prefrontal cortex, and that's where all the thinking and the cognition happens. And once it's in there, we now can work with the emotion. So that sounds really complicated, but it's actually very easy to do. It's just by giving the emotion a name. Just by saying, I feel angry. Already, there's a physiological change in the brain that reduces the intensity of the emotion, and now it becomes something that you can work with. So instead of letting our emotions override us and we end up acting out all the things that are going on inside of us, we can actually get to the stage where we can manage our emotions and use them for the good, And in so doing, then improve our our social interactions, which is so based on the emotional reality that's happening inside of you. But so, did I even ask?
Are you saying so? The first thing is the first thing for you before you even open your mouth, you react to a situation, for you to recognize the emotion you're feeling and name it.
Okay, so first of all, I always talk. I call it the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 rule. So number 5 is handling the relationship. So when something happens, the first thing you want to do, let's handle the relationship. Let's fix it. Let's do something with it. But what about 1, 2, 3, and 4 that happens all before that? What about your own number 1, your self-awareness? Who are you as a person? And if I had to ask even adults today if they could give me 20 words to describe who they are, they do not have the ability. We do not have the words to say I'm creative, I'm adventurous, I'm impulsive, I'm greedy, I'm critical. We don't have that vocabulary. And in a way, how can you interact with another person if you have no clue who you are? So that is very, very, very important. Secondly, part of that self-awareness is understanding what are healthy relationship behaviors, like lying and dishonesty or overbearingness, or I've lost for words here, but all these kind of things are unhealthy behaviors, whereas things such as good listening skills, eye contact, patience, trust, these are all behaviors that create healthy relationships, and you have to know this and be aware of this in your mind. So when you see somebody lying, there needs to be something that says, unhealthy, this is taking me down an unhealthy road. So that's number 1. Number 2 then is what you said was this understanding of the emotion that's going on inside of us. And that is learning to understand what I'm feeling and manage these feelings. Instead of acting out and screaming and shouting or sulking, you know, there's the monster and the mouse. The monster will scream and shout and slam doors and insult, and the mouse will cry and sulk and go and hide and not deal with the problem. So those are the two different modalities that we tend to use instead of learning the tool of assertiveness. I'm giving a lot of information at once. Is it too much?
Go ahead. So, we're following up.
So that's number 1 and 2. Let me just review that. Number 1 is self-awareness. Number 2 is the ability to manage your own emotions. And number 3 is learning empathy, which means I can look at you and I can see your world and understand what you're going through. What are the feelings that you're feeling? And I can actually understand that there are two of us here. And the more I understand myself, the more I'm going to accept you and forgive you for who you are. So that's number 3. And number 4 is choosing my mindset. Am I going to rock brain and just do what I feel like doing? Or am I going to take the higher road and be more flexible with this? So all of this information, 1, 2, 3, and 4, happens way before we even deal with the relationship. Can I give you an example to like make it a little bit clearer?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so let's just say I'm waking up in the morning and we're late. Okay, it happens in my home and everybody's in a state. So the first thing I'm going to start doing, if I'm an undeveloped person, I'm going to start shouting at my kids, come, we're late, where's your lunch, why didn't you do your homework, I told you to get ready, all these kind of things, or else I'll phone my husband and cry and say, I can't do this anymore, I can't do this, right, that's the monster and mouse approach. Or I can actually go through 1, 2, 3, and 4 and say, you know what, listen, I'm a good enough mother, I'm trying my best, okay, I'm not misorganized. I'm a good person. I'm a good mother and I know what I'm doing. So I kind of know who I am. Number 2, what am I feeling? I'm feeling anxious. I'm feeling uptight and I'm feeling very frustrated and resentful that they haven't got themselves ready. So now I know that about myself. It's reducing the impact of that emotion. And this is all happening unconsciously. And thirdly, I look at my kids and I say, you know what? It's hard to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning when you've been on holiday the whole 6 weeks. It's hard to do that. And then the last step is I say, okay, fine, what is my mindset? Am I going to scream and shout? Am I going to get myself stuck in a hole? Am I going to actually take a deep breath, calm myself down, and say to them, guys, listen, I feel very frustrated that we're late. Let's work together as a team and let's see what we can do. And then the whole interaction is a totally different interaction. But that's the work that has to happen inside. And that's exactly what we need to teach our children to start doing on the playground, is being able to be aware of their own emotions, aware of the emotions of other children, being able to make a choice that instead of going to rock brain and act out, I'm actually going to flexi brain and make a good choice.
This is, I guess, where self-regulation comes in, because I feel like a lot of people don't know how to self-regulate and what self-regulating actually means.
Definitely. And that's part of the management of the emotions. You can't manage your emotions until you calm yourself down, because the emotions are so huge and they take up. I always draw a picture of a little body, and this emotion is taking up the whole body, that it's squishing your brain out. There's no brain there because the emotion is taking every space. So in a way, you have to breathe the frustration out. You have to drink a glass of water and wash it away. You know, all these kind of different self-regulation and calming strategies to reduce the impact of that emotion.
I know some schools really, you know, emphasize that self-regulation for a child to be able to continue, you know, if they're struggling or they're in a moment where they can't continue or they're feeling anxious, they know how to self-regulate. They self-regulate on their own and then they can continue.
Definitely. And let's be honest, we've got a whole population of children now who are very anxious, are very stressed. COVID has caused a lot of, I believe, damage to the emotional social health of children. And we need to anyway, push them in these kind of skills. Kids have been sitting on iPads for hours and hours and hours. They've been alone. They've been lonely. Parents have been stressed. We're anxious. So there's a lot of emotions going around. There's a lot of emotions that are taking up a lot of space, and they need space to be let out.
As a mother, how would it work with building that skill when it comes to either play dates or making extramural activities or trying to explain to a child to go to play soccer, even though he isn't so excited about his friends being there? How do you build that within your family and your children?
So the first step, as I said, is the role of the parent and the teacher is to teach the skill. We want to teach the skill that we want to impart to them. The second thing is we want to give them the opportunity to put it into practice. And now there's that middle area where we become facilitators, where we facilitate the relationship. We don't fix it and we don't get involved, but we kind of, in a way, manipulate the situation in terms of whether it's providing equipment or games that are useful to play in a group. Or, for example, making sure your child has enough food so that they don't break down or run out of energy, what you call the sugar low. You know, it's facilitating and manipulating the environment in a very backhanded way so that we're empowering our kids to be able to learn how to do it themselves. Now, this is hard because it means that we have to be with them. And I'm not saying you have to sit in the room with your kid and play, because that's really not healthy. But in a way, that's what teachers have to do. It's hard not to sit at break and have a cup of coffee and just relax, because when kids are unsupervised, that's when all the negative behavior happens. It's not happening in class or when you're talking to them. It's happening when we're not looking, and that's when they need the facilitation.
So let's just take an example, even bring it back into the home. You're sitting on your couch. It's December holidays. You're relaxing and we've got little Johnny and little Sarah playing, right? Your two kids, and they land up getting into a brawl. Okay. Mm. And then they emotion comes out. The one starts fighting with the other, hitting the other, maybe throwing a tantrum. Maybe the one walks away. Like, how do you diffuse something like that? How do you bring them back together to teach them a skill? Let's just go through a practical example like that.
Okay, so I've got nice ideas, but I'm not saying it's easy to put into practice, because I also struggle to put it into practice myself. But often when that kind of thing happens, I actually just stop, I take a deep breath, and I actually go through the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 list. The first thing I do is I actually get in touch with what I am. Because the first thought I'm going to think is, I can't take this. I can't take this. These are the worst children in the world. I am the worst mother. I'm going to crack. All these kind of things. Become aware of what I'm thinking about myself, what I'm thinking about the children. That's very, very important, because if we don't acknowledge them, they come out in very nice, ugly ways, you know? The second thing is I get in touch with what I'm feeling. I feel furious right now. I actually feel furious. I feel resentful that you're not letting me read my book. And I feel angry that you're not letting me we do this again and again and again. And I calm myself down. Like, I don't always do this, but I'm so not perfect. Okay. I calm myself down. I go get a glass of water. I breathe. I speak to a friend even just to like reduce the impact of that feeling. And now I try to think about what they're going through. You know, it's hard to sit at home all day long for 6 weeks. It's really, really hard. And they're only kids. They're still learning these skills. And the next thing then is I'm going to make a choice. Am I going to go down into the monster and mouse, what I call the dungeon, screaming and shouting or sulking and all that kind of thing, which is a very dirty, smelly place to be. We all feel yucky when we're in the dungeon. Or I'm going to choose to be the mensch, and the mensch is being able to be assertive and just say, listen, guys, let's look at what's happening over here. We seem to be having a fight, and there are a lot of feelings going over here. What are you feeling? What do you think your sister's feeling? Okay, should we carry on fighting, or should we try and think of a solution together? Because most problems that happen between kids is peer conflict. We like to blame it on bullying. We say everything's bullying, but it's not. It's peer conflict. And conflict is normal. It is so normal that I want a burger and you want pizza. It's so normal that you want the light on and I want the light off, because we're totally different people. And conflict is normal. But when there's a conflict, we need a solution. And that's something that we need to teach children, to find solutions for conflict instead of mismanaging it.
So then you'd enter into a conversation about them, just giving each one a space to discuss their feelings and maybe even project, what do you feel the other person's feeling? Because nine out of 10 times we will think that the person, whether it's the child to the child or yourself to your employee, to your spouse, you're always projecting what you think they're thinking, where in truth, a lot of the time, you're completely wrong.
Right.
You know, Adel, I was listening to a podcast recently also about the social emotional aspects, and it's exactly what you're saying. It was explaining about people, they were playing a basketball game, like professionals playing a basketball game. And when they went home, if they were able to actually watch themselves on TV or on the video of them actually playing the game, if they were able to look at themselves from a bit of an outside perspective and see how they would be able to react to the people around them, would have an effect on their ability to achieve more than they're achieving. So also taking a step back and looking not only at how you actually played the game, and not how you did so well, but more so how the people around you were reacting to the way you were playing and how you could change that for future games.
Right.
So we've got a question from a listener. Helena wants to know, she says, how are children who are bullied in school going to establish a relationship, because teachers, etc., tend to disregard the bullying? Can you reply to that?
Very much. In fact, I just had someone call me last night about the fact that they've been trying to discuss it with the school, and the bullying continues and continues and continues. And the truth is even if a school has a zero tolerance policy for bullying, there still will be bullying. It is something that happens in businesses. It happens in homes. It's something that naturally happens. So the first thing is, a vulnerable child does need somebody to stand up for them. That is the truth. And if a child is in a school, there needs to be an adult that's available to support the child and protect the child. So that's very, very important. The thing is, it's not easy to do as a teacher, because you're tired. You need a break. The kids, you have your own emotions. And not only that, a lot of these things happen when you're not looking, when you're not aware of things. They're very underhand. And that is really hard. And with the bullying, there's a whole cycle that happens. There's a victim, there's a bystander, there's the bully. Now, the bully is the one who really needs the most help in that situation, because the bully often maybe does, there's two theories. Like, the one theory is that they don't feel good about themselves, so that the only way they push themselves up is by pushing someone else down. That's like the one theory. But there's another theory, is that these children have maladaptive social behavior. So they don't even realize what they're doing. And they need, in a way, to be helped to learn these skills, which isn't very easy. So that's the bully. On the other hand is this thing called the bystander, all the other children that are watching that. And that, in a way, is to create within the classroom a culture where being nice is in. You know? Mm-hmm. Being nice, and it's hard to be a bystander. it's very hard to be a bystander because the bully has so much power. But what we're trying to do is to decrease the power of that bully. How do we do that? One, by educating the bully. Two, by empowering the bystander to make a good choice. And number three, by upskilling the victim to deal with the bully. One, by building their self-esteem, which is huge. Secondly, by giving them tools to deal with the bully in a way that reduces the reaction. Because the more of a reaction the bully is going to get, the more power he gets. So the more we can reduce the intensity of the reaction, the less power that bully is going to get. Now, this is all very, very hard. But this is something that we can definitely give children the skills to do.
Excellent. We are talking to Nikki Merkin, who is teaching us, certainly teaching me, and I'm sure the rest of you, what social emotional learning. If you'd like to comment, 34519, or our telegram is 061-895-1019. We'll be back shortly.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kozulski and Faggy Stern.
So I have another question here. My sense, though, is that we know even from a Torah perspective, when we're dealing with children, right, we're basically dealing with their egos when they're young, right? They're very, like, you know, they're in self-preservation mode. And obviously, as they grow older, we hope that they expand their consciousness to then realize that there's other people in the world that you need to start giving, you need to start doing all of that. And that, you know, if you don't have a socially, emotionally healthy adult, like, the child is doomed. And then, you know, today with all the technological information that's coming through, where it's teaching the kid, you know, it's an I generation. Like, you know, what hope do we have? What hope do we have in trying to change them? Because I kind of projected, and these kids grow up entitled. Then they get married and that entitlement comes thing. Then it comes into the workplace, and it is. It's, you know, dog eats dog kind of thing. You know, like, how many people sit down and say, well, let's try solve the situation. You know, what are you feeling? Let me explain to you what I'm feeling, you know, and have a real mature conversation.
I mean, you see the mess when you see couples coming in for therapy and you see that they don't have the ability to communicate or to resolve conflict, or they're not aware of their feelings. They can't see the other side of their partner. And that's really what having a relationship is all about. But in a way, I do believe that people are very resilient, and people, I have a lot of faith in people and their need and their desire to grow and improve. So that's the one thing. And I think also the power of community is really huge, because if maybe it's not a parent who's there, but maybe there's a teacher, or maybe there's a rabbi, or maybe there's somebody who's there who can in some way plant some seeds that will help this growth. I mean, we're all struggling with it all the time.
So what is your work on a thing? You go into schools and you train teachers. I mean, can parents come to you? Explain a little bit more practically about your work.
So I started off doing mainly group therapy, because there's a lot of power in the group. Kids learn from each other, and it's almost like more powerful than learning from an adult. So that's beautiful. But the problem is that I can't always zone into what that child needs. It's more of a teaching experience in a group than therapy. Whereas individual therapy is very powerful also, because we can zone into exactly what that child needs. There's lots of different areas that we can focus in on to strengthen that child. Now, again, you can't work with a child in isolation. Yes, you can give them the skills and everything, but when they walk out of your therapy room, like, now what? You need somebody who's going to help them put these skills into practice. So there is parent training, and many times parents will come by themselves just to learn them the skills so that they can put it into practice themselves. And then the teachers are very, very open to learning these things. I think that a lot of teachers, I don't think the world is so focused on these social emotional things. I think the world is changing, that it's become a necessity to refocus. So I find that schools and teachers are very open to learning these skills. And they know it. It's not like nothing I'm telling you, you don't know. You all know, you know it, but it's just putting it into ways that makes it easier to understand and to use, making it more conscious. Yeah.
So you, a person would maybe bring their child either if they are that vulnerable child that is being bullied at school, or the child's like not coping, or maybe they're the bullier, like,
Definitely.
Is that kind of the scenario?
For sure, but there's a whole lot more areas. There's areas of children who are on the spectrum and don't understand social skills. They don't understand the importance of it. It's teenagers that are struggling with their own self-identity and how to make friends. You know, they isolate themselves or incredibly shy. Or the kids that, there's such a range of different kids that who have apraxia, for example, and they can't speak. And so now what do you do with that need to socialize when you can't speak? So there's a whole beautiful range of work and also businesses and homes too.
Yeah, it sounds like the earlier this gets worked on, the better. I mean, for a child to have these social skills for the rest of their lives is huge. And I guess to also explain to them the different types of people out there, you know, a lot of the time, when my child's being bullied, I try and explain that the bully's actually very hurt inside and they're not happy and they have their own issues and more have have empathy for them rather than react. Yeah. It plays out everywhere.
For sure. And the truth is that children that who have a positive self-esteem generally act more independently. They can take responsibility for their actions better. They are able to manage conflict better and tolerate like frustrations, they can take on new challenges, and they're able to express their emotions more appropriately. And that's a person with a greater self-esteem. So you're right that these are the things that need to start when they're young. So by the time you're 18, 19 years old and you're starting to think about getting married or whatever it may be, going into business, you have a whole lot of skills that you can use to make your relationships healthier. And when relationships are healthier, they become more satisfying and more enriching for you instead of more, conflicted.
I mean, the social emotional learning is also so huge for mental health.
For sure.
And mental health these days, there's so much going on.
I remember a long time ago, I'm a mother of five kids. Thank God they're all married right now. But I remember we had a lot of conflict in our house as any normal, you know, everybody got on everybody's nerves and we were at our wits' ends. And one weekend, I think I was reading a Stephen Covey book or whatever have you. We used to have family meetings on Sunday nights, right? Trying to just like allow a place for everybody to air their things. And it used to be a bumper bashing thing. She said this, but I said this, but I like this, but I did that. And it went on and on and on. We were exasperated. Wow. And then I heard, I think it was from Stephen Covey, and it worked unbelievably. He said, just go and get a whole bunch of food. Like random food, onions and raspberries and bananas and chocolate.
Is that what our Jews are doing, Adel? That's what it's all about.
And I actually brought it in front of my kids, and I each one had a plate, and everybody had to taste it, right? And so the one kid went, I love the raspberry or whatever it was, the strawberry, and the other goes, I don't like that. And I said, no, that's okay. And we went around, and it actually practically showed them, you know what, it's okay if I like the strawberry and you don't. And it's okay if your brother likes the cheese and you don't. It doesn't mean that we have to bumper bash each other or fight or whatever have you. And it actually brought such a calming, an awareness, which I don't think anybody had, because again, we're into self-preservation. So, you know, you need to like what I like and you need to do what I don't. And if you don't, just get out of the way, whether you run away from it or you come out, as you said, in the monster. So I think it's unbelievably powerful. And now, you know, looking back, whatever, 20 years, 30 years, you know, and sitting in business, I see the same thing with employees. There's times that you'll want to talk about something and people just go into warrior mode. Like either I'm going to attack you, I'm going to fight you, I'm going to defend myself, or I'm going to ram you down. Like, which one do you want? And for sure. You actually look at people and say, like, why can't you just have a conversation about this? Let's just understand the feelings and the emotions.
You ask communication, like, what do you think is communication? You know, it's such a communication is having the ability to be assertive, to assert what your needs are. But the more, the better and the stronger component is the ability to listen, to listen to another person without judging. I don't have to agree with you. I can totally disagree with you, but I'm entering your world and I'm listening to where you are at the moment. And then we can go to the next stage, which is resolution. The first thing is the communication, and the second thing is the resolution. You can't resolve if there's no communication, and you can't communicate if you're not going to listen.
Yeah, sort of right. We've got just one connection.
Connection. And the truth is, what you were saying about the raspberries and the stories, this work is such fun. It is such fun. It's creative. We use videos, and kids love it because everybody loves entering into their own self and finding out who's there, and everybody loves opening those kind of doors and seeing what's happening.
Absolutely fascinating. We'll be back shortly.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kazilski and Fagie Stern.
Well, we've just had an ultimate compliment, Nikki. Somebody says, I am a 75-year-old bobber, and I loved and I learned from this interview, which is really true. You know, I too am a softie, and I've learned a lot. And really, we thank you for coming online and really just opening our minds again to, you know, that it's vitally important for relationships, full stop, you know, for us to become aware of ourselves. And then also just learn skills. If somebody wants to get hold of you, how can they do that?
I think, can I give you my email address? I think that's just easier. First of all, thank you for that compliment. It's nice to, you know, it's really nice to hear that, and I appreciate it. Thank you. So it's Shuli, S for sugar, Shuli.Mirkin, Mirkin, @gmail.com.
And then if they want to
send
up
give us
women,
address, can we drop our children off at you?
Oh, no. I'm sitting with my own. I told you.
Maggie, we understand how you feel, but you're pushing your boundaries.
We'll do a swap. Yeah.
There you go. Well, I'm staying out of this conversation because I don't want either of your kids right now. I've been there, done that. I've had that t-shirt. Thank you again for your time, for your expertise, for your knowledge, for your communication in this area. I think it's been unbelievably valuable. And as I said in the beginning, you know, when it comes to being healthy you and we want to be wealthy human beings, our social, emotional, being, you know, is something that we need to pay as much attention to as much as the food we're putting in and, you know, the physical health that we're striving for. So thank you again, Nikki, Maggie.
Thank you, Nikki. Thank you, Adel. And
I'm looking forward to many more. Again, anybody who wants to join our WhatsApp group, info@chaifm.com, email us your name and your cell number. Of course, you have to have WhatsApp. That is, you know, a given. And please God, we hope that you have a fantastic week ahead, and we will see you same time, same place next week.